Hey guys, I'm here with Stefan. I got that wrong.
That's all right.
Just do it. Let's just do it casually. It's fine. I'm here with Stefan. We're on a Moto podcast. We are in a hotel room somewhere in London, and we are going to talk about Entrix, which is your new business. And you guys are moving really, really fast. So, but before we get there, let's talk about you. You were a management consultant. I think, what's your background?
Yes, I was a management consulting back in the days. My background actually is in business administration. So I did that for my studies because when I came out of school, I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. So I thought I just follow the money into business administration. Did that for 3 years in a small village. Then broke out of the village, went to Munich, which was a bit bigger than the small village. Did a bit of mechanical engineering on the side. Me being German, the mechanical engineers obviously always raise their eyebrows when I tell them that I did one semester of mechanical engineering. In Germany, you're only considered to be a proper engineer when you've at least done a PhD. So that didn't get me very far, but still, I like the technology bit of it. And then indeed I went into management consulting. And that's how I eventually also ended up in the energy sector, but not on purpose, but by accident. my employer back then forced me to work for an energy project. The first project is the only one that I couldn't decide what I wanted to do. I wanted to do automotive, high tech, all this kind of stuff. They put me into energy. And back in the days, I thought that would be a conflict of high tech and, you know, cracking the hard nuts. But actually, it turned out that it's not.
And so you were with McKinsey, right?
Yes, exactly.
And did you get a lot of travel?
Yes, quite some traveling, not as much as some others do. There are some people who basically rounded the globe on a on a kind of weekly basis. Fortunately, I didn't have to do that. Also wouldn't be that appropriate anymore these days. No, but I was primarily working within Germany and did a bit of traveling across Europe and to the Middle East.
And so you're now based in, the team's based in Munich.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Entrix in a second, but firstly, Munich. My heart goes out to Munich. It's just an incredible place.
It is.
I mean, I can't imagine a better place to live.
Yeah.
Summer's beautiful, winter's beautiful, architecture's beautiful, people are pretty laid back. It is awesome. And whereabouts in Munich is it?
Whereabouts in Munich?
Yeah, we're going there. Because there's a river where people do like
surfing.
Surfing on a river.
That's the Eisbach. Well, relatively speaking, we're in London, so I would say, relatively speaking, for London standards, it's our office is close to the Eisbach. But within the Munich map, it's a bit away, but probably the subway could get you there in 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
But so far, nobody on the team with a surfboard.
Okay.
Close to the central station.
Okay. And so do you want to tell me what you guys are doing in the energy space?
Yes. So basically what we are working on is building and creating a new optimizer. So optimizer, probably your crowd exactly knows what it is, but for the people who are not that deep in that space yet, basically what we try to do with Entrix is tell batteries what to do at which point of time and to maximize the value that you can get out of the battery. That sounds like capitalism. It is, of course, to a certain extent, but at the same time, that's what I like about the industry. Getting as much value out of the battery highly correlates with also adding the highest possible value to the energy system.
Yeah, of course.
So that's our ambition and our goal that we're working on right now.
And so how many people are there? There's a team in Munich, right? And do you have a team? You're all based over there?
Yes.
And you're going to be in the UK market?
Yes.
In fact, I want to talk to you about the UK market because you've been, your fresh eyes on the UK electricity market, and you've gone through the process, I'm going to put in brackets here, the pain of the getting into the BSC and all of that stuff. And I think you're the first person we've spoken to on the podcast who's done that. So I want to make sure we talk about that in a second. But so Entrix, how long has it been going? Who's involved? What's the technology? That kind of thing.
Yeah. So we started last summer. Around mid-year, the idea emerged and we started, like the company was registered in August, September. So it has been a bit more than half a year by now.
August, September 2021.
Yes.
Okay, right. So we're fresh. Speaking of fresh.
Still very fresh, yes. We started with a group of like 3 people plus 1 working student. Now we are 12. Next week it will be 15 in April, hopefully getting towards 20. So it's growing. I love the bunch of people that we're having because it's a wide combination of data scientists and people with a bit of an energy background that want to develop or that are working on the algorithms and the technology that we're using. And then on the other hand, we of course also have some generalists and business people who are responsible for making sure that we build the right commercial model around what we're doing and build the company and start forming partnerships and the likes.
But if you guys have only been going for like half a year or mm-hmm. so, and you've already you've had to do a lot of things at the same time concurrently.
Yep.
So you've had to do the market access bit, the technology, the forecasting, and growing the team, and you've done all that in 6 months. So I mean, first thing is you guys are moving really, really fast. For the people watching, what do you do at Entrix?
I'm the managing director and founder of Entrix.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, what's the vision for the company?
You know, I think overall what we're working towards too, obviously we don't want to do only grid scale battery optimization in the UK, but I think it's rather a question of providing more flexibility to the energy system, yeah, and using the flexibility to make the energy transition happen in a somehow efficient and effective way. That's kind of the broader idea. And I think that grid scale battery storage is a great place to start, but it's certainly not the place to end with. Yeah, and I think overall the system has been there for more than a century. Of course, it has been modernized throughout the entire time, but I still think that, you know, we have to make it much more digital, much smarter than it is currently. And that's overall the quest that we are working on.
Okay. And for the UK market, so you're focused on the UK market to begin with, but will you mm-hmm. be expanding into other countries?
Yep.
Yeah. And let's talk about UK or the GB market. How's your experience been understanding the UK market and then getting market access? And what are some interesting things you've learned along the way?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the right differentiation that you're drawing there. The understanding part and then the execution part, kind of. The understanding part, I have to admit, that is kind of tricky because there are just so many different bits and pieces. And especially when you haven't been in exactly that space beforehand, it's very hard to understand what you actually have to do. And you know, I've been in energy for a bit, but I certainly never really looked into how to form a balancing circle and these kinds of things. Yeah, so that is some kind of very specific domain knowledge that you need to have. The execution part, I would say, was okay. Plus, I would say that the stakeholders that we've so far been in touch with in the UK, they are all extremely supportive. Yeah, so Okay. Shout out, actually. I'm not fishing for compliments or so, but really, I think the job that Alexon, for example, is doing, or that the guys at Apex are doing, that's actually quite good. They really put an effort into making this understandable. But trying to understand the overall big picture and seeing what exactly you have to do and which avenues you have to take, I think that's the trickiest part.
And yeah, I mean, there's so many little jobs to do, right?
Yes.
You've got to integrate with the API of Apex, and you've got to go through the documentation for, well, even understanding what how Alexon works, let alone what you need to do. And all the other stuff all at once, plus trying to hire a team and move fast because you're a startup and you've got to move fast. So where are you with the BSC at the moment? And can you just talk through that process? Because I think people will be interested.
Yes. So actually, yesterday we were registered officially as a non-physical trader.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
We should probably put some balloon things on now.
Yeah, please. Yes. I want to have the head of Neil. Maybe you can Photoshop it on my head now. So officially we were registered yesterday, mm-hmm. Which you can do a bit in advance of actually being operational. And we officially exceeded the BSC, which I can, of course, remember because I'm from the Rhineland in Germany, and that's like a saint day. It's the 11th of November, 11-11.
Oh, okay.
That's typically where carnival season starts. That's the day that we exceeded the BSC officially. So that's the first step that you do, that you have to become part of the BSC, that you have to sign a couple of documents.
What does that mean? What do you get at the end of that?
Not much, like a tick mark on a website. No, but what it officially means is that you are the BSC. I can't give you like the printed definition of it, but you know, if I had to put it in my own words, I would say the BSC is kind of the overall system which the flows in the energy system of the UK are being managed.
Yeah, this is the balancing assessment code administered by Alexa, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And what do I mean with flows? I mean the flows both of electricity on the one hand, on the other hand also the financial flows. So they're administrating both of this and like the coupling of the two different resources, quote unquote.
We've actually got someone from Alexon coming on in a couple of podcast times, so
nice.
We will ask them all of these questions. But
yeah.
from your perspective, you've now done that word that I can't pronounce, ascended.
The accession.
Acceded, yes. Or accession to the... I don't even know, apart from this particular instance in the balancing assessment code, I don't know if anyone knows any other... Is there any other time you use that word, Neil, you'll know.
Accession,
yeah.
Oh, beginning with an A.
Beginning with an A.
No.
No, okay, it's confirmed, it's confirmed. So, and there's lots of things like that around these codes.
Yeah.
but it's words that you've never really seen before, and
acronyms are abbreviations. Acronyms. Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
So we were chatting offline. You were talking about Mavernas.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. It's tricky. Right? You've got to constantly have a screen up with the Alexon website and try to go through it. But anyway, I digress. So you're now part of the BSC, and now you can do non-physical trading. What does that mean?
And non-physical trading means that we are now allowed, theoretically, practically we can't just yet, I'll tell you in a second why, but that would mean that I'm allowed to trade electricity now without it actually being moved physically into a generation or supply source, or something in between, being a battery. Okay. So that's what we're allowed to do.
And who's in charge of allowing you to do that?
Alexon. So they do that. And you basically, you know, the process is as follows. You kind of have to show interest. Then then you do like an intro meeting with them, and they tell you all the different avenues that you can take to become part of the BSC. They explain you a bit what the differences between those avenues are. And then, after all, it's lots of filling out documents and answering some kind of questions of what exactly you intend to do. And I think, after all, it's a bit of a sanity check that you're actually knowing what you're getting yourself into. So I think that's what they want to make sure, that this is actually a system that you know, is dealing with real electricity, and that kind of matters, because otherwise all these lights here would be out. And I think that's what they after all want to sanity check.
And so, do you have to prove that you have capital or reserves or credit cover or something like that?
Yeah, a bit, but it's kind of affordable, I would say. Yeah. At least the Alexon part. And then, you know, once you've exceeded, then the question is, in which role do you want to exceed? You have to tell them beforehand. But then, you know, once you exceed and register for those particular roles, then there are a couple of extra tests. Mm-hmm. And the non-physical trader one, I would say, is rather the simple one. The key difference is that you have to give them a couple of names of people that they could talk to if something were to happen. So they now have my phone number. Plus, what you also do is that you run a couple of technical tests with which they basically test your system and make sure that the communication flows could work appropriately. And that's basically all you need for the non-physical trader. And now we have a balancing circle, and you know, they can send us invoices and so on and so forth.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yep. So you're all set up. And then what about the physical side? So
yes.
What's your first asset going to be? Do you know that already? And how are you going to control it? What's the plan?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, after all, that's exactly what we want to do, right? Because we don't want to do only the trading, but it's not the trading within certain contracts, but we want to do an optimization over time with the asset. So just briefly finishing up the Alexon part, what you have to do there to not only do the non-physical trading is that you register as a generator, which is 95% the same process, and you know, you don't have to do everything twice. You can just do it once, and then the last step basically is that you register your asset that you run, and once you've done that, you're also a generator.
I guess the thing to highlight here is that energy storage is not generation, right? But in the, because we're using codes that were invented and legal documents that were invented. Probably negotiated over many, many years.
Yep.
We're using those old documents that don't really have space for energy storage. And now we've got this energy storage, and you have to say, oh, we're just going to sort of shoehorn it into this generation thing.
Yeah.
It's messy.
A bit, yes.
Yeah. So you guys register as generation, and you register your assets, and then away you go. Is that how it works?
So what we are going to do is that by mid-year at some point, there will indeed be the first asset that we can operate if everything goes well. Mm-hmm. Let's see. There are still a few things that we have to master, but we have good partners, so I'm quite confident that we'll actually manage. And then after all, you know, we want to run this thing. And obviously, us being so young and still not being a huge team, we rely on partners for some of the more technical aspects. But what we want to focus on ourselves is obviously the entire intelligence part that lies behind the optimization. So what we are going to do is that we'll be a member of the European Power Exchange. I have to do a trader exam in the upcoming days and show that I'm a trader. So I can, if needed, make some decisions. And
you need two phones. You need a buy phone and a cell phone.
Yeah, exactly
the same.
Kind of,
you just need to shout a lot and throw papers everywhere.
Exactly. So that's one thing that will help us to actually do the intraday trading. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So buying energy for the, let's say, 3 p.m. contract, doing that at 1:30 and then selling again at 3 for the 5 p.m. contract or something like that.
This is all Apex.
That's all done through Apex. So we have to register with Apex as well. But Yeah.
And EPEX is the European Power Exchange. That, exactly. That's mainly a lot of volume in the intraday market, for example.
Yeah.
And so, okay, so you've got access to EPEX. By the way, are you doing? You're going to do all your trading through EPEX via API? We're going to go down a rabbit hole here, but Modo, we've been trying to get. EPEX's API is so, the security they have for that system, it is so deep.
Yeah.
I think it took us, I don't know, 9 months to get in. Yeah. You have to get into a sandbox, and they have to look at you and go through all your stuff and check that you're not going to break everything. But that's another conversation. But I guess they have to do that if they're a trading platform. It's probably a good thing that they make sure that you can't break everything. Again, because the lights would go out probably, or the money of the lights would go out.
Yeah.
So you've got EPEX access. You've got access to the Elexon, the balancing mechanism by default by being a BSC party, which is great. And then for accessing frequency response services and other things in National Grid, I guess you can do that nearer the time.
Yes, we will do that nearer the time. And on this, you then have to be in touch with National Grid, which is like the third party that you have to be in touch with. Yeah. And that's about that I meant in the beginning, right? Those are the bits and pieces that are kind of difficult to comprehend and understand, because they are also parties like Ofgem and so on and so forth, and then there are the DNOs and all these kinds of things. And you know, you kind of understand what their role is, but you don't really know what to do with which of these parties. Yeah, but National Grid will be important for then being able to enter the ancillary services, so especially dynamic containment being the key market for grid scale battery storage. And that is then, of course, also closely linked to the asset, because after all, the frequency response mechanisms, they are they have much more physical component to it. They need to be able to respond immediately and so on and so forth. So those are the kinds of checks that will be run by National Grid, making sure that the asset could actually react that quickly and wouldn't break anything in the system.
And are you building optimization algorithms or software in a controlled environment at the moment? Are you testing, back testing, and what's that process like, and who's involved? You've got a team or people doing that at the moment?
Yeah, so we got a team. They are incredibly smart.
It's a good start.
Yeah. They are proper engineers. We have PhDs in engineering on the team. Yeah, so they actually know something, which is cool. Yes, so they develop the algorithms and the basic concepts that we want to work with. Of course, we're also working with some advisors, especially from academia. This greatly helps. Right now we can't do anything but just testing and trying to build things up. But we have access to the most relevant data that we need. And then, it's just the typical approach, I would say, of how you develop algorithms. You start with something, and then, you just see in like kind of test set how well you would have performed. You do the back testing. And of course, you can also simulate. You can only simulate that to a certain extent, because you can't really see how the market would react to our actions. That's something that I can hardly simulate. But we start getting an idea.
I want to ask you about, I want to go startup chat now, right? Because you guys, what have you learned along the way, specifically about all the stuff you've been talking here, but also generally as a company that's, I guess you've got some capital behind you, but you're spending money, right? So you're burning cash.
Yes.
not to just keep on saying that over and over, but you already have it all the way through the night, probably reminding you. We have the same. And that process and that journey and what you've learned until now, what does that look like?
So maybe on this one part with regards to, us burning cash, and I think I didn't say that in the intro, but it's of course important. We are backed by an investor called Pelion Green Future in Munich, and they are amazing because they really helped us up and running quite quickly. And they are also giving us, they give us both very operational and very strategic support. So the fact that we are now a team of 12 largely depends on them, because they really helped us with the hiring and just managing the processes and sparring with us who actually should be on the team and so on and so forth. And that's a great support that we're having. The key learnings, probably I should have reflected more about this actively. I think there's always these subtle changes that you experience day after day, or that you hardly experience, but they kind of happen implicitly. I'm not sure what your reflection would be on your key learnings of the past couple of months, if you could really pinpoint them.
Generally, we make a lot of mistakes. You just have to be willing to make lots of mistakes and just really fix them fast.
Yes, and I think what's actually what's the precondition in order to be able to do mistakes is that you actually do something.
No, but not just talk about doing it. You have to just constantly do new stuff.
Exactly, but yeah. I think that's maybe he watches it. There was a guy at McKinsey who I worked with a lot, and his motto was "Machen kommt von Machen," which in German means doing comes from doing. Yeah, so very simple. Yeah, and of course, exactly what you want to hear from the McKinsey senior partner. Yeah, he says, just do it now. Yeah. But I actually think that he is very right about it. And that's, I think, also how startup life looks like, right? There's no way how exactly to find out how the registration processes work. You can read all these documents a bazillions of times, but just start, reach out to Alexon, work with them. And, you know, you do mistakes along the way, but most of the time there's someone who tells you that you did a mistake, and then you have to be flexible enough to fix it quickly. And I think that's the kind of spirit that we started embracing I think fairly quickly, and that's also the part that's a lot of fun. That also only works from my perspective in such an environment, because in consulting and especially in the large corporates, there's not maybe that much the flexibility to quickly adapt as quickly as you can do in a startup.
To create that environment, you have to. It's a tricky hiring question because you have to hire people who are comfortable going to something knowing nothing.
Yep.
With a goal of having to deliver something big on it and just have to upskill and break things and break things and break things and break yep. things and go back to zero and go back to zero and go back to zero until it happens.
Yeah.
And that's a very interesting type of person, fantastic type of person, but very difficult to spot in hiring processes, I think.
Yeah. You're right. So far, I think we are aware of this skill being needed. So we try to test it a bit during the recruiting process. But of course, you can't really look in someone's head, right? So in the end, experience shows. But so far, we have been lucky. So people are being pragmatic. And I think we also have a nice mix of, I think me personally, I tend to be rather on the extreme side of just saying, okay, yeah, I know enough. Now let's just do it. So I don't like reading too much all these lengthy documents and so on. And then we have some people on the team who say, hold your horses, let's do this properly and thoroughly and, you know, really think about
people.
It. Exactly, yeah. But otherwise, I think that's a nice balance. And I think that's kind of
how I think we probably have the same. We need people to tell me to just slow down things sometimes. and so coming back to energy markets, right?
Yeah.
Why did you choose the UK? Why is a company in Munich doing this in the UK?
No, I get this asked a lot, and most of the time
that sounded quite a xenophobic question. I didn't mean
No. It's all good. I just had to laugh a bit because typically when people ask me that question in our intro calls when we look for new people, I always say because the UK is an island. But it's kind of true. No, but I think in general, if you look at the global perspective on grid scale battery storage, the UK is simply the most advanced market, and. Maybe we are a bit late to the party. I don't quite know. There's still quite some potential, but also the competition is fierce.
Yeah,
there are some players who really know what they're doing, and they are a great source of inspiration, kind of. And you guys at Modo, you put this out very transparently on your leaderboard. But I think after all, it's the biggest and most advanced market right now. And I think our approach to this is that, first of all, yes, we think that there's still some potential. Plus, secondly, from our perspective, it also makes sense to be part of the most advanced market because probably there are quite some lessons that you can learn from the most advanced market that you can then transfer to other geographies later on. And obviously, all geographies will be different. They come from a very different system, from a different regulatory, world. But still, I think the overall challenge that we would see in the markets will be somehow similar.
Yeah.
So I would hope that some of the approaches that regulators and stakeholders in the energy markets choose will be somewhat similar, and then it's just cool to be at the forefront, kind of.
Well, what's happening in Germany in the energy storage world? Is that a market that is interesting to an optimizer, or is it set up differently?
It's set up very differently, I would say. But to be honest, I know more about the UK market than about the German market, so I can't.
It's a job. Yeah,
exactly. But I think it's structured a bit differently, and I think. In the UK, I think National Grid over the past 2-3 years or so, they have done a good job in basically putting out revenue streams or putting out markets and creating markets for grid scale battery storage that actually allows them to have a business case. I think in Germany we're lagging a bit behind with on this regard. But then if you just look a bit at the macro perspective, I think there's no way around creating those markets too, because our new government just decided, if I'm not mistaken, that we want to phase out coal by 2030. Our nuclear power plants, I think we have two left. We shut off 2 6 or 7 weeks ago.
And you're buying a lot of gas at the moment from Eastern Europe.
Exactly. So we are highly reliant on gas, which... development of the past weeks will show how well they will be going in the near future. But, you know, all of this is basically leading us in Germany into a direction where we say, you know, we really have to get renewables up to scale. And if we see how fast we've been moving so far with the energy transition and what kind of roadblocks we typically have, we won't manage just building out renewables and building out the grid, because that has gone quite slowly. So what we actually have to do is that we really use all the renewable energy that we can get as efficiently as possible. And I think that's exactly then where grid-scale battery storage comes in. And for this, you know, you have to build a market, because otherwise nobody will come in.
So Unless the government's going to start building batteries and own them. If it's going to be private money, they need to have it needs to have a return. You need to have a market. You need to stimulate it. Yeah. And there's a whole load of steps back.
Yeah. No, but I think there's some progress that we can see. So, for example, there's a scheme called innovation tenders or so. I'm not sure if that's the right translation into English. That is also for renewable sites that are then coupled with storage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of makes sense, right? Especially when you look at it from the grid congestion perspective. That's not really happening at scale just yet. But in general, I would be confident that Germany is also an attractive market for optimizers and grid-scale battery storage in general in the years to come.
And so my last question to you, we ask this a lot on the podcast, and I know you do a lot of thinking about these things. Your vision for what the future energy system is, is there a particular angle on that? Some people think a lot more about digitization, some people think a lot more about decentralization, some people think the whole thing's a load of rubbish. your vision for the future energy system, what's radical and what excites you about that?
That's a big question to ask. I tend to agree on the digital and on the decentralization part, but I think these are not the only components. For me, if you would pin it down to one point, I would say, let's do it right and let's do it smart. I think we have so many technologies out there that would really enable us to do the right things. And, you know, the discussions that we're having here at the conference in the past days, for some of these things, you're just, you know, you mentioned it. In our regulation, we have supply and demand, but that's not all we're having. We have things in between. So My idea of it, and you know, I can't really put it into visionary words, but my idea of it would really be, let's really look at it thoroughly. Let's take a really comprehensive perspective on how we can couple things in a smart way and use all the kinds of technologies and measures that we have to combine it in a way that it will make societies thrive, kind of, because after all, it's the backbone of where we're heading as a society.
Awesome. So we're going to leave it there. I just want to say thanks for coming on. It's been really interesting for me to learn how you're thinking about the UK market from perspective of outside the UK, and also the fact that you're having to go fast. Yep. You're having to push against these systems, which are slow systems, and go faster, and hear your perspective on that. So I just want to say thanks for coming on. We're going to, if people want to learn more about you guys, how do they do that? Go to your website? Do you have Twitter? What?
We have a website and LinkedIn.
Yep.
I will take that now as the kind of motivation to polish the website a bit. We developed the website the first day that we started with Entrix, and since then it hasn't really changed.
You've got more important things to do.
Yeah. Exactly.
So we'll put links in the comments. Please, anybody who's watching this, let us know what you think. And thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks.